Hi, this is Tom from the Happiness Quotient. Thank you for dropping by. You are one of my favorite listeners because if you're listening to this episode, you're hearing it before we changed our name to the Happiness Quotient. Just so you won't be surprised when you listen, you'll hear me talk about Baker Street with Tom Pollard. Believe me, you are in the right place. We've changed our name, but the excellence of the podcast just keeps getting better. Before we get to the episode, if you haven't done so already, please subscribe wherever you're listening, and I hope you'll visit my Patreon page for exclusive content at patreon.com/thehappinessquotient, and take a look at my YouTube page of the same name, where there are many Everest and music-related episodes, adventure-related podcast elements that can't be found here on the podcast itself. Thanks for being here. If you like what you hear, be sure to leave me a review, a rating, and share it with someone you care about. Now, on with the show. Sometimes events take place in our lives that cause us to see everything from a completely different perspective. Sometimes these events are traumatic or tragic, the loss of a loved one, an accident, the news that someone you care about or have known for many years has passed away. What happens in these instances is that it's as if we step outside of our own sphere of identification. We're able to look at the world from an angle that previously we had not been able to see it from. My mother dying in 2016 was one of those instances for me. Same went for much more traumatically after the loss of my brother to suicide. The whole world changed for me. I looked at the world in a different light, at first from a very hurt place, but ultimately came to feel so much gratitude for the gift of being able to see from a different light.
I went down to the boneyard to see what I could find, yeah. Believed I was fixing to die, feeling all funny in my mind. Well, I dreamed to pass through the pearly gates and entered the divine, yeah.
About 2 weeks ago, last Friday, something walked into my house. I guess you could call it a disease. It's not coronavirus, nothing like that. It was something that I actually opened the doors for, threw my arms and my heart around it, welcomed it in with hopes of promising few weeks of gathering, talking, sharing, growing. What I'm talking about is I opened my doors to a person whom I didn't really know before that person walked in, but now I know that person for every single fiber of who she is. A few series of events that took place spun out of control, literally stunning me. I am not one to get involved in political conversations. I never had a political conversation with my father-in-law of 15 years, but a couple of subjects of conversation came up around the fire pit that created what appeared to me a sense of rage and entitlement in this guest of mine. I was attacked and maligned verbally, and it left me really in a state of shock to a certain extent, to be the object of someone's malevolent intentions. To be the object of someone's malevolence is something else indeed. And it also caused me to step outside of my sphere of thinking at the time. This is where the gratitude comes in. The opportunity for me to look at the world from a different angle before which I had not been seeing the world. Nietzsche said that he had no place in his life for people who were not willing to review and reconsider everything that they had ever learned. I feel the exact same way. I do not have a place in my life for people who are unwilling to consider other perspectives or new angles or reconsider the things that they've been taught. I have such an awesome interview I want to share with you today from such a wonderful man, a cool dude, another person that I met on the magical, mysterious world of Instagram, a guy by the name of Oscar Mangui. And we started kind of messaging each other occasionally, going back sometime, because he would occasionally post videos in his story on Instagram of a fire pit. And if anybody has listened to this podcast, they know I'm a big fan of fire pits. I love fire pits. They're the best. And we began conversing, talking, learning that we had a lot in common. He is also a storyteller. He's an adventure and outdoors assignment photographer, a wilderness educator. His Instagram page, Oscar, O-S-C-A-R dot Mangui, M-A-N-G-U-Y, is really good because every single picture is really good. And he would post occasionally pictures on his story and on his timeline of in his hand was a gourd filled with mate. And it is a drink going back well over 1,000 years, more or less a ritualistic kind of drink. It's a mate is made from the yerba plant, and he learned about it in Patagonia some years ago, and which I've had it before as well. You drink it through a silver straw, which actually has like a strain at the tip of it to pull out and block any twigs to get into your mouth. And it's a very strong, strongly caffeinated drink. But as I had never known this, but apparently there's a ritual, like a cultural honor of how one prepares mate and how one shares the experience of drinking with it with the people that they gather to dine with or converse with. And in the spirit of my somewhat traumatic episode of the last week or so, for which I feel nothing but gratitude and joy for realizing that the truth of it that came out of me was I feel joy in life, even when bad things happen. Where I heard a voice and I started to rejoice, yeah. Turning round, I see him smiling down on me. From heaven above, there was Jimmy and Janice and Sister Rosetta too, yeah. There was Sunhouse and Robin Johnson wailing like they do. There were angels in the architecture. Everything was true. The music that we are listening to is my friend, Reverend Freakchild, off his album called The Bodhisattva Blues. It's a new album of his, and this is a song that I love. It's called Sweet, Sweet You. A moving song, and I really dig it. And I asked Reverend Freakchild if it would be okay if I used this song for a podcast episode, and he said absolutely. If you like this song and are interested in looking on how to purchase it, you could go to Amazon.com and type in Reverend Freakchild, The Bodhisattva Blues, and I believe at least right now you can get MP3s of each track or the whole thing. Onward with Season 2, Episode 6, Oscar Mangui from Finland. Let's dial him up.
Hello, Tom.
Oscar, how are you?
I'm doing good, thank you.
Yeah, it's good to hear your voice. And it's so it's if it's 1 o'clock or so here, what time does that make it where you live? And could you tell me a little bit about where you live?
Like here is about almost 8:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And I live in a set of islands that is in eastern Finland.
Mm.
It's a big region that is called the Saima region or the Saima Lake. Imagine like the Great Lakes in U.S.
Mm.
And it's like, I don't know, about the 10,000 lakes, and they're like connected, and they're like millions of islands, from like very, very small islands to like bigger, like city-sized islands.
Wow.
And I live in a bigger island that is called, it's like part of like a Keremaki like setup.
Mm-hmm.
And the body of water that I have is called Puruvesi.
Hmm.
And it's like very clear water, very like natural spring water looking. And and it's more or less like the latitude that I have in comparison to U.S.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like at Fairbanks latitude.
Oh, yeah. That would explain why you say it's still light out, 9:30-ish, almost toward 10 o'clock right now.
Yes.
That's crazy. Yes. Incredible. Well, that, I think, somehow, some way, that's how we got connected. I might have followed you, or you might have followed me on Instagram, which to me is it's my favorite place, at least virtually, in the world right now, because I've met some incredible people. But I was entranced by some of the photographs that you have posted on your Instagram, and I will also say that I've visited your website. So at that, I'm blown away at your photographs. Could you tell me and the listeners a little bit about what you do, like professionally speaking, or even just as a pure passion, but what do you do? Like, what's the essence of it?
I'm a outdoor leader, or like an outdoor educator.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like a career that I started about maybe 17 years ago.
Mm.
And I grew up in Baja, Mexico.
Hmm.
Like I grew up on the southern part of Baja. Like
wow.
If people are familiar with La Paz.
Yeah.
It's like a beautiful, beautiful place. And that's where I grew up. And I started exploring the desert since I was a kid.
Hmm.
And I want to say that I started like picking up photography when I was about like 19.
Hmm.
To record like my trips. Like I took photos of like cave paintings and desert landscapes.
Mm.
And eventually that led me to do expeditions, longer expeditions. So when I was about 20, I did my first long expedition.
Mm.
That was about 461 days where we hiked the entire coast of Baja. And we start from the border between Baja in Arizona in California, where the Colorado River goes down to the Sea of Cortez.
Mm.
And then we made our way all the way down south to Cabo. And then we made all the way up north on the Pacific side to towards California. And then we kind of like finished the loop. And that was about 15 months. And that's pretty much where like mark my outdoors career.
Mm.
And from there I start like doing photography, but at the same time I start like teaching wilderness trips.
Mm.
And and I have been teaching for a U.S. program.
Mm-hmm.
And that led me to go from Baja to Alaska, to New Zealand, to Patagonia, to the Arctic, up in Scandinavia, up also in the Arctic in the Brooks Range. And my life has been always in some way in transitions, like moving from place to place, and that made me connect with many cultures, with many people.
Mm.
And now that led me to live here in Finland.
Hmm. Wow, that's really impressive. Well, one of the things that I've read that you said is the camera is an extension of your creativity. And I get that, because the images that I take or try to take or I think are going to be beautiful and hopefully brings joy to some people. It's very true. And so I scroll down your Instagram and your website and I see pictures of penguins and your kayaking trips where there's icebergs and beautiful birds. And I'm not sure if these are orca, but frozen landscapes and just really incredible stuff. And so there's obviously something about an austere landscape, something pure where there might have been no human being has ever traveled before. It seems to me that you're drawn there, and to the people you're drawn to are the people who choose to live in those places. And so from the pictures I've seen of your home, your cabin in Finland, it's that. You live in a very austere, absolutely starkly beautiful place. And so that's just part of your life, huh?
Yes, well, my wife and I were like used to like lead this expedition, so like being here in the cabin is like more like glamping because we actually have we have walls instead of just a tent, and it's good. We like live off the grid right here. It's like a small nice cabin that is nice and cozy with a fireplace, and we have a sauna. That's where we like to the sauna most of the days, and that's where we shower. We have like an outdoor kitchen, and we still like, you know, like do everything outdoors, go for walks in the bush or like go for swims in the lake. And then our closest neighbors are maybe about a mile, which is like my in-laws. And right now what we do is like we set up fishing nets. So we have like, that's what we do, like sustainable fishing, and that's what we pull food to eat. And we have like, so far we're like thinking on here starting like a small little like garden just to have like some of the greens. But I want to say that we go to town about once a week or once every 10 days to like get some other supplies, but we try to stay here as much as possible. We are all off the grid. There's no electricity or running water. So to charge electronics, we need to also do it in town, or we use a little like solar panel, like the ones that we take on expeditions to charge stuff. Like that's what we use.
Yeah.
And it's very quiet, very simple living. And there's something about living in nature. It's like once you're like in extended expeditions, I feel like I cannot go back to the what we call normal living. And for many years this became my normal. So I really appreciate having clean air, clean water, no pollution of any kind. It's like I like to have foster like a nice natural life, if you want to call it in that way.
Wow. Yeah, that's really well put. And I feel that. First, you beat me to the punch. I was going to say, how often do you go to town? And I get the week to 10 days, but I try so hard not to go into town. And I live in a cabin and I don't see any houses where I am. It's smaller. And when there's no leaves on the trees, which is now, I can see Mount Washington, which is the highest point in the Northeast United States, and it's gorgeous. And you can see it through the trees. And I always am so excited that the warm weather is coming. But when the leaves grow in, it obscures the view of this gorgeous, stark mountain standing up on the landscape. So with some bittersweet acceptance, I welcome the warm weather, the bugs, all the things that come with it. But you also have brought with you from your travels some, I want to say that it's a ritual, but I've really enjoyed hearing you talk about your daily, you make mate in the morning as opposed to like a cup of coffee. And I'm really intrigued with this because I've traveled to Chile and Argentina on numerous occasions, and that was part of the traditions down there. And that's all that I have of it. Bolivia, I've spent time in. tell me about mate and if I'm pronouncing it correctly and what it is and like how this has become a ritual in your morning life.
The first time that I had mate, I think, was like maybe in 2005. I was leading a trip, a sailing trip, and in the Sea of Cortez. Mm-hmm. And one of my coworkers brought the mate, and at the time we were just drinking mate, like if you're drinking some kind of tea. Mm. And I cannot understand the process of like drinking mate. But until I went to Chile to lead some sea kayaking expeditions in the 11 region, like close to the, between the northern and southern ice field. Mm. Like the beautiful places where you paddle and you don't see anybody there. And I worked with like some Chileans and they brought the mate. And that's what I understood. And I bought into this like mate culture. Mm. And and pretty much since 2010 until now, I have been drinking mate pretty much every day. And
wow.
And I want to say maybe like the past 5 years, I have been very consistent. It's like I for sure I can say that I have been drinking every single day.
Wow.
And, yeah. And what I have learned, I drink mate amargo. So I learned this in Patagonia Chilena, mm-hmm. in Coyhaique, like in the Aysén region, where you see like gauchos drinking mate, people in their houses drinking mate, and you see people with different ages and kids also drinking mate. And then I start getting a little bit more into like what exactly like people like feel or what people like actually how they interact with the mate. So talking to one of these gauchos in a place called Bernardo Glacier, like way back in the middle of the nowhere, Orlando, now he became a park ranger and he's like doing some conservation and some like land and also a little bit closer to Coyhaique. But he was telling me that a mate is kind of like a way of living and a mate is a way of sharing. Because mate has like a ritual. It's like you have the person that serves the mate called the cebador, and that person needs to make sure that the water is at the perfect temperature, and then the yerba is needs to be very well prepared, and then you have like the tools is like the gourd, which is like o calabaza or matera. It can be normally like made of gourd, or can be like ceramic, or can be made of bamboo. And you have the bombilla, which is like normally you can get metal bombillas, but there's also like normal made of bamboo as well. And then you have the cebador, and the cebador is gonna start pouring the mate and start passing it to the right. It's gonna move like to from your right counterclockwise towards you. And I wanna say that the little mates that you have seen that I post in the Instagram, that will last about maybe 20 to 25 servings, and about maybe I wanna say like 32 ounces of water. Wow. About like the mate. When you are a kid, your parents will give you mate with milk and honey. Then that's how you will get it. And then some people like it with sugar. Like they will add a little bit of sugar or honey. They also tell you like if you get mate dulce, like if somebody, especially like somebody that is flirting with you and gives you like mate dulce, that means that that person really likes you. Wow. And also, they said that because the mate has like a little, the ritual like needs to go in certain order. But then when you are in a funeral and you are the cebador, you can go and give the mate to the person that you feel that needs the most, like that mate. So you can like pass it to the person to kind of like express your support. And also people add juju, which is like, imagine like putting some like mint or chamomile tea into your mate. And what else? And normally, I want to say that in that region where I learned, people take it amargo or bitter.
Mm.
And it's just pretty much plain mate with, like, hot water.
Your explanation about this being a way of life is really endearing, and you've kind of created this real intrigue on my part to connect with that the true ritual history of mate, where it sounds like it goes back many, many years, like hundreds of years, I guess. But how do you get the mate? Isn't it? It's from the plant, from yerba, is it, or yerba mate?
Yerba mate, and this is grown in Paraguay, kind of like in South America area, like northern Uruguay, Paraguay.
Mm.
That's what like most of the plants are, and it's like a shrub.
Mm.
It's a big shrub, and then gets dried. I think it's about 5 years. Gets dried for about 5. Yeah,
wow.
I want to say 5 years, and then some of them, they kind of like smoke the plant, and other ones is just dry.
Mm.
And when it's prepared, there's like two kinds. They call it with con palo or sin palo. It means like with sticks or with no sticks.
Right,
and,
yeah.
This goes way back. I think they have found in some like all the old tombs.
Yeah.
From like people from, I think, from southern Brazil.
Hmm.
They have found, like, I don't know, maybe 1,000 years back, like the tools to have the mate with.
Wow.
And at some point when they were like the conquistadores down there, mate was a coin. Like people would get paid by mate.
Really?
By the pound. And
wow.
And that was like back in the days, like, I don't know, late 1700s, 1800s. Wow.
So real quickly, without overdoing the mate talk, but what does it taste like? Is it anything like coffee? And I know that it's high in caffeine, so it's kind of like a cup of coffee, at least caffeine-wise, apparently. But what's the flavor? Does it just taste like, I don't know?
Flavor, I think, is like some people describe it, that is like green tea.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of dry green tea, not quite to like black tea, but a little bit of dry green tea. And some people like it at the first time, and other people don't like it at all.
Mm.
And you need to grow your taste to it.
Yeah, right. So for you, how... without, you know, just kind of to wrap things up here a little bit, how has this COVID, like the quarantine culture, impacted you? Has it changed your plans? Are you feeling like you're adapting well? Has it been no change? Or have you had to change any of your travel plans since this has all happened?
Oh, yes, for sure. I have changed a lot of things. I want to say that I came back from Patagonia in February, and was when like all this COVID was like kicking in.
Mm.
But it was not like, you know, like we could not see the impacts completely yet. And I was prepping to document a ski trip up in the Arctic.
Mm.
There was a ski expedition that was like leaving from the Swedish Arctic, from a place called Abisko, towards the biggest mountain of Sweden, Kebnekaise.
Hmm.
And it was about like 9 to 10 days trip. And I was like doing all the photos, the photography for this trip. And so that got canceled. Then I had also a trip at this moment in Alaska, where I will take a group to the Kenai Fjords to teach them advanced kayaking skills, and also that got canceled. Or program in Scandinavia, which we run all the hiking and sea kayaking trips there, from June to late August, also is completely canceled. So right now is in somewhat like vacation time.
Yeah. But when you're working, you're doing what you love. It's just that you don't have the... You're not taking care of people, or don't have to worry about their safety,
yeah.
Right?
Yes. So now, actually, I was telling talking to my wife. It's like, okay, I think seems like I have like at least 2 weeks off. I'm gonna like just take vacations, completely vacations, and it's just trying to stay healthy and have fun and do all the things that I always wanted to do, and I haven't had the chance to do them because I'm always also doing what I like as well. But it's just like these little things, like I have been digging from like photos that, you know, like they're like 20 years old, and I'm pulling things that I totally forgot that they existed.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I would have had this opportunity to talk to you without, you know, all this extra time that we've had on our hand. You'd be gone right now. We might not even be chatting now. So,
yes.
So good things and, come from it.
Yes. And, but the thing is, it's a process. It's like not easy. I understand people. Is the situation that we have is a challenge. It's quite hard, and I think if one of the the first thing is to accept that this what is happening is hard, and because if we don't accept that this like what is actually happening at a global level, then it's like we get trapped in our heads and we feel that we don't have a freedom or we don't have ability to do things. It's like, I think like now that's the challenge. It's like the challenge is to accept what is happening. The situation sucks, but then you need to do the best out of it. And that's what we do in the expeditions. That's what we like practice every single day. And I think if developing the tolerance for adversity is a skill that must be like now put into practice and having resiliency and just adaptability, being curious, being playful, is like these are like very important abilities and skills to right now put into practice. Is I know that it's hard, but then just remember every time that we do something that is very hard, that's something that is gonna stay in our memories forever, and that's what is gonna make us grow. And but if we don't see it, if we're distracted, we can miss the opportunity to actually bring something very good out of the situation.
Great insight from Oscar Mangui. If you want to check out his Instagram page, it's under his name, oscar.mangui, M-A-N-G-U-Y. And his website is oscarmangui.com.
And I will be like happy to help people with their photography. I'll be happy like also just to chat with people about what they have in mind, and we can create something good. Also, people can come to Scandinavia once everything opens up. It's like I run workshops in here, little trips where we go to like national parks and take photos and create either content for companies or just like create like adventure photography for individuals and families.
The music is by the Reverend Freakchild off his The Bodhisattva Blues release, a recent release, and this is Sweet Sweet You. Thanks for being here at Baker Street with Tom Pollard. I'll be back in a week or so with another uplifting, inspirational story and interview. Thanks again. I will see you real soon.
Going down to the boneyard to see what I could find. Yeah, I believed I was fixing to die, feeling all funny in my mind. Well, I dreamed to pass through the pearly gates and enter the divine, yeah. All my heroes standing round, letting their little light shine. There were Jimmy and Janice and John, letting them do, yeah. There was Sundance and Robin Johnson, wailing like they do. There were angels in the architecture, everything was true. Was you, sweet, sweet you, oh, sweet, sweet you, sweet, sweet you.
there at your grave and try to say a prayer, yeah, asking you for the right direction, knowing you wasn't there. But I swear I heard a voice and I started to rejoice, yeah, turning round to see him smiling down on me from heaven above. There was Jimmy and Janice and Sister Rosetta too, yeah, there was Sunhouse and Robin Johnson wailing like they do. There were angels in the architecture, everything was true. Only thing missing was you.
If you're still here, thank you for visiting. I hope you'll take a moment to subscribe wherever you're listening, and I hope you'll also visit my Patreon page for exclusive content at patreon.com/thehappinessquotient, and take a look at my YouTube page of the same name, where there are many Everest and music-related episodes, as well as adventure content and interview snippets that can't be found here on the podcast. Thank you for being here. I hope you'll share this, leave me a review, a rating, and come back soon.